consider yourself to be a smart person?
Well, we would never, you know, claim to be Einstein or anything, but yeah. I think of myself as ahead of the curve. Not as smart as Don Moore, of course. Do you think there are any dumb things that you believe, even though you are a relatively smart person? There is a method to my madness. We're going to get into that in just a moment. This is the Ask the Pastor program, the Bible study. Our numbers are 505-780-5100, 1-800-730-2727. It doesn't happen too many times a year, but today may be one of those days where it's probably just as good being here as it is being in Florida. Pastor Don Moore is pastor at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Apopka, Florida, which, as I recall, is not too far from Orlando. Good morning, Pastor.
You're right about all that.
I'm right about all that?
Oh, yeah.
Disneyland heating up? Disney World or whatever it is?
Well, they're having their problems because everybody's a little tight these days.
Yeah.
But they're doing okay.
They're doing all right?
Yeah.
How far are you from Disney World?
Probably 20 miles.
Do you ever go there?
Oh, sure.
Do you? Oh, good. All right. Yeah. It's like here in St. Louis, you know, I'm 15 miles from the Arch. I haven't been there since 1970 or something like that. It's kind of silly,
you,
I guess.
You go out the Great Adventure occasionally?
No.
Oh, silly you?
No, I'm just a bump on a log.
Oh, boy.
Not too much fun. Well, good. Is there anything out of Disney World that is particularly new or inspiring?
Well, they've been redoing a lot of things, Hector, because, you know, some of the stuff was getting pretty old, and
yeah,
it's a kind of an ongoing process.
That's kind of like me. Some of that stuff's getting pretty old, too.
Yeah, well,
but there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
Well, I have this story that I found kind of intriguing, and I thought to myself, this would be a good question to pose to Pastor Moore. And it goes on here a little bit, so if you'll bear with me. This is an article which is based on something that a pastor has written. The headline is 10 Dumb Things Smart Christians Believe. In other words, if you are a smart Christian, you shouldn't believe these things, but you do. And he goes on to say, many Christians, new and seasoned alike, tend to bank on promises that God never made, according to one pastor. So when God doesn't come through on those promises, some are likely to become angry at God. And that, to me, as a pastor over all my years, is always one of the saddest things, according to Larry Osborne. He is the teaching pastor at a church called North Coast Church in Vista, California. Osborne's church draws over 7,000 people, is hoping to spare a lot of Jesus followers from anger. He's also hoping Christians will peruse Scripture more and align themselves with what God really says, rather than the quote-unquote word on the street. So he spelled out some of the dumb things smart Christians believe, 10 to be specific, in a new book. He calls those dumb things spiritual urban legends, a belief, story, assumption, or truism that gets passed around as fact, even in Sunday school classes or Bible study. Here's a quote. What happens is somebody passes out a truism that sounds good, and we've just heard it so many times that we don't bother to check it out, he explained to the Christian Post. And that's the source of most of these urban legends. They're true partially, but they're not true completely. One of the partial truths many Christians fall victim to is the belief that living God's way will bring good fortune. The Bible makes no such promise, Osborne writes in 10 Dumb Things Smart Christians Believe. The 57-year-old pastor recalls one moment when a church attendee named Tim waited in line to talk to him after a weekend worship service. As soon as I said, "Hey, what's up?" he let loose. Osborne writes, he said, "Bleep your bleeping God. I'm done. Your Jesus hasn't done me a bit of good. I've tried to clean up my act. I've even tried your bleep tithing thing. It doesn't work. I just lost my job. My wife needs surgery, and now I don't have any insurance. Where's your bleeping God when we need him?" After a few more expletives, he finally turned and stormed out. I never saw him again. Have you ever had an experience like that, Pastor?
Well, I'm trying to think. I have been confronted with people on occasion that get mad at God for one thing or another. I think that's pretty common to just about everybody. but they don't usually go so far, at least not where I've been looking. People get upset and know kind of instinctively by their faith that they're off base when they get mad at God. And so, you know, one, it keeps them from going too far, usually. And another thing is that it makes them question what they're thinking. And then, you know, you can have a conversation about it. Now, I know that what that guy experienced happens a lot, but I haven't seen it too much.
Well, he says that the guy left and he never saw him again.
Yeah.
If you had been in his shoes, if this had happened to you and you had called him up on Monday and said, hey, let's have lunch or, you know, can we visit? And he said yes. What would you do?
Well, the best thing you can do is hear him out, see what's going on, and then try to tell him what God actually says so that he can experience that properly. The mistake is, as this guy says, that if you do everything God says, you're going to have good fortune one way or another, and that's it's not precisely true. You know, the kind of things you get from God are a promise that you're going to suffer, a promise that the world will hate you, a promise that things are going to be bad from time to time because human suffering is not at all uncommon. And what he promises is not so much good fortune as his encouragement, his support, his watchful eye, his protection to an extent, his constant supply of everything that you need and all that is good. But they're not necessarily going to be things that you're seeing clearly and properly. It's, you know, the problem with faith and life is that the first law, if you will, of human conception, human perception of these things is that we're probably going to get it wrong. And so you have to, instead of turning to your own perception, turn to what God has said. That's pretty hard to do, especially when you're hurting.
Have you ever been in a situation where you were in this predicament and the person that you were chatting with or looking to have a conversation with is in fact very angry?
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not going to just sit down and say, well, let's compare biblical notes here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see where you are and we'll see where I am and let's see if we can work it out. Can't do that because the other person is so emotional.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
A conversation, wait it out. You know, if you can be in fellowship with someone in a period of time and in a safe place, a lot of times they'll calm down and you can talk to them about things. And then the relationship that you have in that moment of calm is going to be helpful for you having, you know, difficult conversations. And that's what you need to do. It doesn't always work that way because everybody doesn't always calm down, but you, sooner or later they will. And if they're willing to talk about it, then you can do that.
Do you think that the sort of quid pro quo religious approach, that is, if I come to church, if I attend communion, if I put some money in the basket, maybe even if I do some personal Bible reading on my own time, if I do those things, then God will bless me. That's a kind of a quid pro quo approach. Do you think that that is... Now, we're going to subtract the St. Paul Apopka people, because I'm sure they are all just...
yeah, they got it all perfect.
They've
huh?
got it all perfect. But,
yeah.
You know, in your average American congregation, do you think that the quid pro quo approach is the majority view or the minority view?
I think if you just go to general population, it's probably majority. But I don't think, you know, people that are dealing with good teaching are going to think that way all the time. If you're hearing the truth over and over and over again, you know, it does play on your mind. Of course, we all go there eventually at one time or another. We all get...
No. Pastor, are you there? That didn't sound like a very good Sound did it. Oh, is he?
Yeah, I'm back. We lost power.
Oh, okay. Well, they probably used it all over at Disney World there.
Well, you know, they do suck it up a little bit there.
Yeah, I never know whether to just disconnect and retry or wait a few minutes. So I was glad I waited. Anyway, we lost you there for about 10 seconds. So.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
I don't even know what I was talking about.
Well, I had asked you about whether or not the this for that religious approach is the majority view or the minority view, and you were making a comment that if a congregation or if somebody is sitting under pretty sound teaching and they're fairly regular in sitting under that, that they'll, I think you were about to say that their chances are good that they'll have it right.
Yeah, at least most of the time. And like I think I also said that we all get it wrong occasionally too. It's because you think like that. But I mean, the bottom line problem there is, do you think God owes you something? And of course, that's never true. On the other hand, he does say he will bless you when you do these things. He makes that promise, but the blessing may not be good fortune. It might just be strength in time of misfortune. And very often is exactly that. We endure better than the rest of the world because we have the Spirit of God in us, and his blessing helps us to do that. Sometimes it is good fortune in the way we understand that to mean, but very often it isn't.
Would you say, I'm going to give you two options here. You pick the option you think makes the most sense. That when you, Pastor Don Moore, when you preach or teach, do you pretty much just proclaim what the Bible has to say? You lay it out there, and then the Holy Spirit can do what he wills with whatever it is that you said? Or do you say to yourself, there's a pretty good chance that there are people here in front of me, maybe not at St. Paul Apopka, but in some congregations, the majority of the people sitting in the pews, who are listening to me and processing what I'm saying in the context of, okay, Pastor, tell me what to do so I can do it and be in good standing with God.
Yeah.
And if that's the way they're listening, then doesn't that make your preaching and teaching job tougher?
Well, yeah, it does. But on the other hand, the Word of God works with that, too. It's not so much a mental process as it is a spiritual one. A mental process supports the thing, hopefully, but doesn't always. Sometimes it fights against it because we're all broken like that. But what I try to do when I preach is as you say, speak the Word of God. Now, sometimes you have to explain things because it's not all obvious, especially to ears that are listening without faith. And you have to gain that access to some extent by the things you say and explain things in a way that they're understandable and actually applicable to the life of the person you're speaking to, which is, you know, there's some art involved in that. But in the end, what I'm trying to do is say what God says. That's the highest task. And when you do that, you have his promise that he will accomplish his purpose. It doesn't matter who's listening. He'll accomplish his purpose because he always does. Now, again, I might be looking for everybody to look at me and say how wonderful that was or just to absolutely do whatever I tell them to do, but that may not be what he accomplishes because that may not be his purpose. Sometimes you actually push people down the road closer to trouble because they need to have some hardship that brings them back to God. And, you know, you really never know what that's going to be. I don't know what the result of my preaching is going to be. It's not up to me. All I'm responsible for is to bring the message that God intends, which is hard enough.
This article from which I was reading, Pastor Osborne, after recounting this episode where a young man walked out of church and just sort of unloaded on him, the pastor, because he felt like he had been doing his duty and had gotten the left hand of God, that he had been experiencing adversity, which he did not feel like he was worthy to experience.
Yeah.
The pastor who has written this book, 10 Dumb Things Smart Christians Believe, said that it wasn't the series of tough breaks or unfortunate events that caused Tim to go off, Rather, it was, quote, a set of unfounded and unrealistic expectations about what it means to follow God and what should happen when we venture to follow God. That's what set him off.
Yeah.
How do you react to that statement?
Well, I think he's right. If you expect God to do what you intend when you listen to him, then you're going to get disappointed a lot, because he doesn't say that that's what's going to happen. What he does say that he will bless. He does say that he will make your life better. But it may not be in the way you expect. As I said, you may experience greater suffering when you listen to God. And a lot of times how you deal with that suffering is the greater blessing to other people and to your own life, especially as it deals with eternal things. But we don't always like that. It's a pretty tough problem. But I think he's probably right about that. That's the way people get out of line on that. If you talk about stewardship, it's a real tough thing, because it doesn't mean you're going to do well just because you check up to 10%. It just doesn't work like that.
Pastor Osborne also warns that those who introduce Christ to others and testify of only the quote-unquote abundant Christian life, while downplaying the harder teachings of Jesus, set the stage for disillusionment when things go awry.
Yeah, absolutely true.
So, when you're doing the work of an evangelist, Pastor, I assume that you get the opportunity to do that from time to time.
Sure.
You tell people that, join my church here in Apopka and you can suffer with the rest of us? Is that how you go about that?
That's usually my first approach, and when they don't listen, I try to come up with something else.
Yeah?
Well, my understanding of what God does for me and for people is to relieve suffering. Because we all sin and we all fall short of the glory of God. That's the message, or at least the first part of it. But we also have his son dying on the cross, suffering horribly, in fact, so that we can have life in eternity. And that hope, it changes perspective on everything else. It doesn't mean you won't suffer. In fact, as I said, sometimes you'll suffer more because you're connected to Jesus and the world hates that. But the usual procedure, at least for me, is to find out what is ailing a person. I mean, that's why people generally come to me. That's I look for what it is a person actually has need for, and look to see how Jesus addresses that, and then try to speak to them with it. It rarely is come to me and everything will be wonderful. It doesn't work like that.
Here's another so-called urban legend that the pastor has identified in his book, 10 Dumb Things Smart Christians Believe. And he asserts that following Christ can be tough, and having faith isn't always going to fix everything. It's another spiritual urban legend that faith can fix anything, and another one that can lead to an angry outburst or a spiritual meltdown. As a pastor, this is one of the most common urban legends Osborne has encountered. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think, again, you know, that's a little bit of that prosperity gospel thing. But, you know, you hear things like, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can toss mountains and throw trees. And
that's what it says, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. Except, you know, then the next thing you have to understand is that you don't have it. Anybody that's a Christian knows that they don't have it. And, you know, that was the point. It wasn't that you do have it, it's that you don't have it.
I thought the point was that if I don't have it, I need to get busy and get it.
Yeah, right, right. Well, there is an element to truth in that, but the place where you get it is the gift of God. And the faith that you have that does what it needs to do is not yours, it's his. And that's a pretty hard thing to see. So, and then, you know, that faith is going to accomplish what he wants, not what you want. So if you actually do need to move a mountain, and that is the will of God, then his faith will do that in you, and you can do it. There's plenty of miracles all over the Old and New Testaments that testify to that, but they are uncommon, and they serve his purpose only occasionally. And so you may not be moving a lot of mountains with his faith. It feels like a disappointment when you put it like that. But on the other hand, his faith saves you. Keeps you tight with God, keeps you on the path to heaven, gives you comfort when things are not good. And when you look up and see a mountain needs moved, you can be assured that God will do it or not do it according to what is good. And those things are really helpful.
When we talk about, as you said, the prosperity gospel, some of those things that where the teaching is, if you get your life in order, if you become obedient, then God is obligated to bless you. If you only have, you know, faith the size of a mustard seed, then pretty much all things are within your fingertips. Are these things that regularly complicate your life as a pastor, or are they kind of out there on the periphery?
Well, it's a hard thing to describe. People don't usually talk to me like that specifically. Lutherans are a little more reticent than that anyway, and most of them know better in principle. But I guess what I would say is I think that it's under there sometimes, and I don't see it, and it confuses issues. For instance, you know, my church is pretty small. We have a hard time with almost everything because of that. And people get upset because we're not succeeding in the things that we do, you know, in the way that they hope, where there's a bunch of people flowing in here. You know, the only thing I can comfort them with is that God knows what he's doing. He's here, he's in you, and you're all operating with his grace, and that he'll accomplish what he needs to accomplish. That's the gospel, that he will do what is good, and that he is in charge of these things. It's not that you're going to have everything just good, or at least not in the way that you perceive it. We don't have control over results, and that is a horribly frustrating problem.
Usually the churches that have thousands of members seem to be the ones that are teaching just those things. But Pastor Osborne, it doesn't say, at least I haven't found anywhere listed here, what his denomination is or whether he has a non-denominational church. But he's got 7,000 people, and he seems to be running in the opposite direction of popular media Christianity these days.
Yeah.
Are you encouraged by that?
Yeah, I am. He seems to understand at least that part. That's a great thing. Prosperity gospel is nice. It's comfortable, and it's a happy thing, and a lot of people preach it. And as it is said, people will come to whatever itches their itchy ears, and you know that breeds success in the worldly sort of a way pretty commonly, and so people do it, and they even think they're doing what they're supposed to do.
On the other side of this break, I've got great news for you.
Oh yeah?
It's not the gospel this time.
Okay.
But the missing link has been found. Did you know that?
No.
All right. We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Bible Study, Ask the Pastor. Pastor Don Moore, St. Paul Lutheran Church, Apopka, Florida. Did you know the missing link has been found? Stay with us. Here's an email from our friend Karen. She says, listening to your November 20th Bible study on 1 Peter on my iPod in southeastern Michigan. I'm always about a month behind since I don't have immediate access and have to travel to get the downloads. Thank you for the Bible study. It is a regular part of my daily schedule, and I recommend it to my students and their families. Blessings in Christ to you in the new year and everyone at KFUO. Thanks, Karen, for writing. If you'd like to write me, crathert at kfuo.org. That's crathert at kfuo.org.
We've told you before how much we appreciate your generosity, but did you know that some listeners prefer to earmark their donation for a specific need? In fact, that's how AM850 KFUO received a digital transmitter. Other listeners have purchased CD players, microphones, or perhaps recording equipment. If you'd like to earmark your donation for a specific need, contact Chuck Rathert. He's got the short list of needs at AM850 KFUO.
Is the shark a fish or not? Find the answer on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moment's host, Ian Taylor.
there are over 350 species of shark. These remarkable creatures range from about the size of a shrimp to the whale shark that can be over 60 feet long. Most people view sharks as an ancient form of primitive fish, often because they are popularly represented to the public as a so-called living fossil. The truth is, sharks are not primitive or simple. In fact, scientists who classify living things are uncomfortable about classifying sharks as fish, preferring instead to call them fish-like vertebrates. Unlike all other fish, the shark has no skeleton. In fact, the shark's skin serves as the anchor for its muscles, just as bones serve for anchors in other animals. Unlike fish, sharks have no gill coverings and even have a placenta very much like mammals. Sharks are also much more complex than fish. They have sophisticated sense organs. Their brains are much larger compared to the body weight than fish, and they can learn a route through a maze as well as laboratory rabbits. Sharks are also socially complex, and they communicate with each other in a variety of ways. Among the many kinds of creatures God has created, using his unlimited imagination, it appears that he followed some similar themes in each kind. This offers us a better principle than does evolution for classifying living things, which arranges them from simple to complex.
To get a complete set of transcripts from Creation Moments programs, ask about the book Letting God Create Your Day when you visit us online at creationmoments.com. And join us again for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
AM 850 KFUO is underwritten in part by Reliable Heating and Cooling, 8463 Delport Drive. The folks at Reliable Heating and Cooling remind you that during this in-between season, between the extremes of winter and summer, it's generally easier to arrange for a service checkup on your furnace or your air conditioner. That tip courtesy of Reliable Heating and Cooling, 8463 Delport Drive, a corporate underwriter of AM 850 KFUO.
Here's a message from your friends at LCMS World Relief and Human Care. You have no doubt heard the struggles of food pantries to keep up with demand amidst the economic downturn. But with your generous gifts to LCMS World Relief and Human Care, hunger relief programs from shore to shore will receive much-needed assistance to feed and care for people hit by the recession. To see a full list of people who need your help projects or to make a gift, visit LCMS World Relief and Human Care on the web. Back at our Bible study program, with Pastor Don Moore, pastor at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Apopka, Florida. What is the weather down there today, by the way, Pastor? What's the temperature?
It's about 67, 68,
67.
But it's been raining for 3 days.
Oh, well, then you can be envious of me.
I am, in fact, envious of you.
Wow, this happens like once a decade. But it makes me feel a little bit better about myself, so
well,
I've got that going for me. Here's a story that I wanted to share with you and get your take on. This is off a website called Sky News, sky.com, and I linked to it from the Drudge Report. From the United Kingdom, scientists have unveiled a 47-million-year-old fossilized skeleton of a monkey hailed as the missing link in human evolution. The search for a direct connection between humans and the rest of the animal kingdom has taken 200 years, but it was presented to the world today at a special news conference in New York. The discovery of the 95% complete lemur monkey, dubbed Ida, is described by experts as the eighth wonder of the world. They say its impact on the world of paleontology will be somewhat like an asteroid falling down to Earth. Researchers say proof of this transitional species finally confirms Charles Darwin's theory of evolution, and that the then radical outlandish ideas he came up with during his time aboard the Beagle. Sir David Attenborough said Darwin would have been thrilled to have seen the fossil and says it tells us who we are and where we came from. What do you think?
I think they're all nuts.
I kind of knew you were going to say that.
It's a lemur. I mean, how hard is that to understand? This is one of the things that just utterly kills me about the evolution business. If there were evolution, there would be nothing called a lemur or a human being or a monkey or anything else that we call species, because there would be everything in between and everything on the continuum if there was really evolution. And that's just not the case. So if you find one thing that's aberrant enough that you might think it trails on one trail or another, so what? It just certainly doesn't confirm anything. Certainly isn't a missing link. It might be if there were everything else all over the place, and then you wouldn't even notice. You certainly couldn't call it a lemur, because a lemur is something. It's a species. And it certainly isn't a human being.
Attenborough says, this little creature is going to show us our connection with the rest of the mammals. This is the one that connects us directly with them. Now, people can say, okay, we are primates. Show us the link.
Yeah.
The link they would have said up to now is missing. Well, it's no longer missing. The team of the world's leading fossil experts, led by Professor Jorn Hurum of Norway's National History Museum, have been secretly researching the 1 foot, 9 inch tall young female monkey for the past 2 years. And now it has been transported to New York under high security and unveiled to the world during the bicentenary of Darwin's birth. Later this month, it will be exhibited for one day only at the Natural History Museum in London before being returned to Oslo. Scientists say Ida, the monkey, squashed to the thickness of a beer mat by the immense passage of time, is the most complete primate fossil ever found, with her human-like nails instead of claws and opposable big toes. She is placed at the very roots of human evolution when early primates first developed features that would eventually develop on our own. Now, Pastor, you and I are skeptical at best.
Yep.
We might even describe this as ridiculous.
Yep.
But we're not scientists. We're not experts. We're not going to New York. We're not going to Oslo. What we think is probably viewed by other people as ridiculous.
Could be.
So, is, you know, the article here, the tone is game, set, match. Chuck and Don, you lose.
I don't think that that's going to rattle one little tiny cage.
You don't feel rattled?
Nope.
I think they'd be disappointed.
Well, I hope so. Because what they're saying is foolish. And I might not be a scientist in the same vein as they are, but I know a little bit, and I know enough to know that what they're saying is craziness.
Now, are you saying that as a believer, or are you saying that as an educated man?
I can say that in both departments. They're not going to have any respect for my faith, but there is absolutely nothing there that changes the facts. It might have a couple of features that are unusual for a lemur monkey, but it already said it's a lemur monkey. It's not a human being. It's not even 2 feet tall. It doesn't make any sense that what they're saying is as important as what they're saying. It's really not even feasible. And that, I say, as an educated man.
Well, they've got a photograph here, and it would appear that the creature's tail is as long as the creature. It has a very long tail.
Lemurs do.
And it has a hand-like foot. The opposable thumb, or the opposable big toe is the way they described it.
Yeah.
Human-like fingernails instead of claws.
I'd have to look up lemurs, but it's probably a lemur.
You know, I'm thinking to myself, even if I were not a Christian, even if I did not have a predisposition toward the creation story in Genesis 1 and 2, this is still tough for me to acknowledge this, looking at this skeleton here. This, you know, to suddenly acclaim this is the missing link falls a little short, it seems to me.
Yeah. I think it's way, way short. way, way short. It's not even close. It's not even interesting to close. I just don't see any way that it has the impact that it has. I don't. You would have to be thinking in a very strange way for that to make that kind of impact.
In spite of your well-articulated skepticism,
mm-hmm.
Why do I feel like 20 years from now, everybody's going to believe in evolution, and it will be game, set, match, and you won't be able to make the arguments that you've made without experiencing extreme ridicule?
Yeah. I get that now, so that's not really news.
And what do you do when you get that?
Well, all I can do is speak the evidence that's obvious. The theory doesn't hold any water. And it's not like there's a little bit of evidence to the contrary. It's most of the evidence is to the contrary. It is not a theory that works on any scientific level. And that any scientist that's being honest has got to say that. And it's been, like they said, 200 years since Mr. Darwin went and said what he said, only half believing it himself. And we still don't have that kind of overwhelming belief in evolution.
Well, now you sound very much like Pastor Warren Wirth, who participates in a segment here in the morning show on Friday mornings that we call the Creation Club. You sound very much like Dr. Bob Weiss, who teaches here at Concordia Seminary.
And he's influenced me some.
And, you know, men of good reputation, certainly men with opinions who, by virtue of their reputation, ought to be considered.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still puzzled by your claim, their claim, that, how did you say it, most of the evidence is against evolutionary theory. Yet we can have in the media a proclamation today that the missing link has been found. And this is you know that this is going to be well accepted across the world.
Yeah, I don't doubt that it will. The problem with this issue is really not evidentiary. It is a faith-based problem. And what happens is...
But you see, as soon as you say that, you're done.
Well,
because
I
soon
am.
as you claim Genesis 1-2, or as soon as you claim mystery and faith-based as the source of your truth,
yeah.
It's over.
Well, that would be true if I was talking about that only on one side, but that's not the case. It is true for both sides, and this is why I say that.
How do you mean?
Well, I believe the Genesis account, and basically it's because there isn't anything else out there that works better, and I base my salvation on God's word and on the things that he's accomplished in me, and if I don't believe that, then I'm kind of wasting my time. But on the other side of the issue, if you don't accept that thing, if you even go as far as to say there is no God, which is pretty much where this thing comes from, that is a faith statement. But even if you don't say it, The evolutionary theory has to come from there, because if you are assuming that there is no God, if you're saying that God had nothing to do with this, then you have to have a random process, so what happens is you have to go from human being back to something that looks like human being back to something that looks like that, and you have to make assumptions that one proceeded from the other in a random fashion. And, of course, that's where the 47 million years thing comes from, too, because if you're going to do something in a random fashion in the opposite direction of every scientific fact, then you're going to have a long time to get that accident to happen. And the reason I say opposite to everything else, I was talking to somebody the other day. I said, sitting in my own house, I said, if nature took its course, there were no human beings in this neighborhood, what would my house look like in 1,000 years? And that it was obvious that in this environment, in this climate, the place would be jungle-strewn and the house would either be non-existent or at least garbage. Because it's not going to turn itself into a skyscraper at random. And that's what evolution requires of me to understand, that from bacteria reorganizing themselves, from DNA changing itself or even building itself in the first place, out of that comes a human being over a process of time. Well, it doesn't work like that. None of nature works like that. It's all random in the opposite direction. Things dissipate and dissolve. They don't organize themselves. And so the only reason that they have to say that is because there is no God. And yet we're here. So how did that happen? Well, now I got to have a theory, and that's the one they have to have. And that's where it comes from. It's from faith.
One of the things that I find a little bit troubling from just a normal secular perspective, and I can't subtract my predisposition in favor of Genesis 1 and 2. That's what I believe to be true, and so it's hard for me to just sort of set that aside and think outside that box. But
yeah.
One of the things that strikes me as curious is that most of the time when some great evolutionary discovery is made and announced, it has a kind of a snake oil quality to it. You know, snake oil didn't heal anything either. But the snake oil salesman always had a dramatic flair in his pitch in order to peddle his snake oil.
Right.
And when I read that scientists have declared this to be the eighth wonder of the world, I start thinking snake oil salesman. But that's just me.
Because I say it's true. That's what you're talking about.
Well, you know, if you've got something that is dubious and you want people to believe it in spite of their skepticism,
mm-hmm.
you got to oversell it.
Yeah.
You know, you got to really build it up. You got to call it things like the eighth wonder of the world.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I saw this billed as the eighth wonder of the world, I got skeptical without having to appeal to Genesis 1 and 2.
Yeah.
But then that's just me.
Well, it is, but it's the obvious track of reason and logic. It can't go where they said it has to go. It can't go there. And maybe that's the reason why it comes like that. You line up enough scientists and sound like you know what you're talking about, and people are going to believe it to some extent. But if they actually thought about it and actually looked at the evidence, there's very few people that could come to that conclusion. Ordinary people wouldn't. And that's why I don't think the evolution is ever going to win the whole gambit. It's just not going to happen because it's a lie and it doesn't make any sense.
Well, this story is dated today, Tuesday, May 19th,
mm-hmm.
and in the afternoon in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
So I am presuming that this so-called breaking news is going to reverberate through the American media here today and in the days ahead. And that will trigger, as it always does, the prerequisite trotting out of all the creationists or anti-evolutionists who will do their best to undermine this claim that this is the eighth wonder of the world and the missing link. And then it'll return to a kind of equilibrium where the evolutionists believe in evolution and we believe in creation,
yeah.
and it's pretty much the same.
Well, that's a, I don't know, I guess that's a view that would make you, why bother talking, but when you can make a logical argument that supports what God has said, it's worth doing because you may get someone's attention, and that is going to be helpful to them. And I think it's worth making the argument.
Now, you sound as if you've had this debate on occasion. Sure, you say. Now, is this a debate that you've had, like, inside your own family, or is it a debate that happens when you're at lunch with some folks, or maybe on the golf course, or at Disney World, or is this a debate that happens because you're a pastor and you got parishioners that are leaning in the direction of evolution?
Well, I'd have to say all of those in one way or another. I mean, in my own family, my brother is of that mindset that he believes those things, and I've had that discussion with many people over time, and sitting in jury duty or at the grocery store or whatever, whenever a conversation comes up and people are curious what I think. So I'm all ready to have the conversation because it produces relationships and it might give you a chance to say something about Jesus too.
Do you have a method that you tend to follow? Is there a technique that you use in order to engage the conversation so as to advance it, and, you know, and not just shut it down? Or is just every situation different?
I would say they're all different because everybody grabs onto certain things in the way of evidence. And, you know, they convince themselves by something that caught their attention. And so, you know, typically, and this is true with just about any discussion I have, you got to be a little bit on your toes to listen to what people say and then engage that with real evidence. And without trying to discredit a person personally, but just, you know, deal with what is obvious and true. And you can get people to agree with the evidence easy enough. And then very often you can have a conversation about the other things that are actually spoken by God, and you can show them to some extent how this makes more sense.
When you have these encounters,
yeah,
and it sounds like you've had way more of these encounters than I've had, and I haven't had probably more than half a dozen.
Well, you're not wearing your collar on backwards.
Well, that's true. Maybe that's the key.
You should get one. See what happens.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know how well I could carry the conversation. However, when this happens, do you find that the conversation tends to be contentious or hostile, adversarial, or do you find that the conversation tends to be more or less lighthearted and productive and stimulating?
Well, they come all different ways. I guess most of the time, if someone wants to talk about it, they may come at me with some sarcasm to start with, but I can engage that. And
how do you engage that?
Well, I just don't react according to what they'd expect. You know?
I mean, they say something like, "Yeah, you probably believe in that creation nonsense." Is that what you're saying? Something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, my brother said to me once, "You probably do believe that the Earth is less than 10,000 years old, don't you?" And I said, "Sure, I do. I got lots of reasons to think that way too." And then we can have a conversation. You know, he's my brother, which takes the edge off of it a little bit. But this is true for almost anyone. You know, if they want to be cranked up about it, I can deal with that. I'm pretty good with crazy people too. So
that's why you're talking to me.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, do you have a go-to argument, Pastor? Do you have a kind of a clincher or a card in your deck there that when you play it, it's a pretty good move?
I think the one that I like the best in my own mind, it may not work for everybody, but it's the one that I was already telling you about, species. You know, a Genesis account talks about kinds, and, you know, that's something that we have. And then if you go into the Latin Bible, it says species there. And this is the thing that is so obvious to me is if you have ongoing evolution, Abraham would have looked nothing like me, been nothing like me. You couldn't have said this is a man and I'm a man, because you couldn't say this is a cat or this is a frog or this is a rose, because there wouldn't be anything like that. There would be everything on the continuum of every kind of life. There would be no DNA specific things that cause reproduction to come a man into a man and a frog into a frog. It wouldn't happen that way, because evolution would be an ongoing process. There'd be a continuum. You wouldn't need a missing link, because everything would be a link. And to me, that's the most obvious argument of all. But it takes a little bit of thinking to recognize it. Sometimes I don't get anywhere with it. But that's the strongest argument that I have.
Let's see if we can squeeze a phone call in here before the hour is up. Hi, Rick. You're on the Bible study.
Oh, thanks for taking the call. The one thing that when I'm in conversation with people, I haven't heard the entire program. I don't know if you hit on this or not. But when I talk to them about Adam and Eve, and they're created when they're, I'm thinking, somewhere between 15 and 20 years old. And why couldn't God just do the same with the universe? If he wanted something to look like it's been here for 435 million years, he certainly could.
Yeah,
Pastor, your thoughts?
Well, I'd say that's true too, but I don't think it would be necessary for for people to see that either. Because the argument isn't because it looks that old. The argument is it has to be that old for things to have evolved in the way that we say that they have.
Pastor Moore, what do you think the chances are that if we could peel back the layers and layers of argument and assertion from the evolutionary community so that we could eventually lay bare their souls, that what we really have there is a reluctance to submit to the God that creation implies? And all the scientific arguments and all the missing links and all the fossils and all those things are really just a diversion from the fact that if there is a creator, if that explanation is allowed to stand, then that means that I am accountable to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, frankly, some preferences that that are going to put me crosswise with him, so I'd rather have an explanation that allows me to eliminate him.
Yep, that sounds like a good way to handle it. In fact, the only good reason for making this argument anyway is to bring people to the truth, and the truth is the thing that brings them to Jesus eventually. It brings them to the law in the same way you're talking about, and that law escorts them directly to the Savior if you can work that out. The difficulty is, you know, there's a lot of layers. And that house of cards is a really big one. So you have to get at things that are as I say, they're faith-based to some extent, or lack of faith-based. And if you have to say there is no God, then you know it's a really hard argument to get at. But you're right. I mean, that's really the goal.
So when you find yourself, we've got less than a minute here. When you find yourself in discussion with someone, is it usually true that you engage at a kind of a scientific slash secular level and wind up at a faith non-scientific level?
Well, yes. I'm arguing from both, but if I can cast doubt with good reason and sound thinking, then people are going to pay attention to it. You argue with the facts and you argue with sound thinking, then it's very hard to argue back. And if you can cast doubt on something, then you can have the other conversation because it explains a better way.
I predict by this time next year there'll be a new Missing Link ride at Disney World.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Thank you, Pastor Moore. Always good to talk to you.
Yeah, I like talking to you too.
We appreciate your participation. Pastor Don Moore, St. Paul Lutheran Church in Apopka, Florida, our Ask the Pastor guest here in this hour. Tomorrow we continue in Ephesians 6. Actually, we'll wrap up Ephesians 6, the book of Ephesians, with Pastor Tom Eckstein in Jamestown, North Dakota. And we'll begin a series, a three-part series with Pastor Lane Berglund on the gifts in Galatians. That's tomorrow.
For a free copy of the Bible study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.